We look at these first six verses this morning. As we come to that, those verses, I wonder whether you ever feel weary of serving God. Do you ever get tired of the drudgery of just doing the same old service in church? Same old prep, same old Sunday school, same old kids, noisy kids. Maybe it's Route 66 or youth work. Just every week having to prepare again, house group, whatever it is. Sometimes it seems relentless, doesn't it? Do you ever get weary of doing that? What's it all for? God, is this really working? Is this really what it's about? What about setting up? Providing tea and coffee? Going to ETOLs? Encouraging folks there? Do you get tired of doing that? Maybe tired of trying to be a good witness at school to tell people about Jesus, whether it's our friends or colleagues or teachers. Just get tired of doing it. It's hard work, isn't it? We get discouraged. Maybe you're not yet serving God. That's another question to think about. Maybe you're not yet actually serving God. Can I ask that question? So maybe you're not actually weary of serving God because you've never really got started. But maybe there's something which is, for some reason, discouraging you or holding you back from serving God. Maybe as a younger Christian, it might be that you need some encouragement, a nudge, a reminder. And I hope you will be encouraged and motivated by this passage today to serve God. Or maybe this morning you're not a Christian or not sure that you are. Maybe the thought of serving God is just a bit weird or alien. I mean, what is that all about, serving God? Well, that's understandable to a degree, as we'll see later in this passage. But I hope that you too will be challenged to serve God and by what he has to say to us here. But in all those things, it's easy to be discouraged, isn't it? In all sorts of walks of life. But certainly in our church life and in gospel work, easy to lose heart, to be discouraged, maybe when people ridicule us or make fun of us, or maybe they don't give us the credit that we think is due to us, the praise, the encouragement, to get dejected, and just maybe we don't see results and success. Where's the end game? Is it all working? But as we carry on through our series in 2 Corinthians, that's kind of where we come to in chapter 4, today, and the situation Paul faces and he writes about, and those that he's writing to in this church in Corinth, that they're facing as well, the danger of becoming disillusioned or losing heart, being discouraged. And even though he wrote this letter something like, 1900 years ago, I guess it was, that's a long time, isn't it? You think 1900 years back, goodness me, no iPods, no internet. How did they live? But there's a remarkable similarity, isn't there, between these people there, back in Corinth, and actually us today, our culture, what we are like, the culture in Chippenham and in the UK in 2009. And what we're going to see in this passage here today is not at all an interesting exercise in looking back at someone's writing. Actually, it's highly relevant to you and to me. I found it very challenging and encouraging, not least in preparing it. But it will be highly challenging and encouraging for all of us in terms of what are you and I going to do today and tomorrow in serving God? How are we going to go about it? Are we going to give up or are we going to go on and be encouraged? And if so, why? So Paul's aim here, so if Paul has an aim in these six verses that we look at here in chapter 4, his aim as he writes to these Christians is to explain why it is that he is continually motivated to serve God. Paul, of all people who faced death and persecution, and earlier on in chapter 1, I think it is, he explains how they had despaired almost to the point of death. And all the opposition, he wants to show why he doesn't lose heart, and through that, so that the people he writes to and us, we here today, can follow his example, that they and we will go on serving and working for God in his work, and to do so faithfully and truthfully. That's his aim there. And his message, if you like, his key thrust is that Paul's way of working, the way that Paul describes he works for God and for the gospel, is God's way of working. Right? He hasn't made it himself. It's God's way of working, and that we should stick to it. And you can see this as we pick in from verse 1. Look at verse 1 here. Straight away, he talks about not losing heart. Therefore, since through God's mercy we have this ministry, we do not lose heart. So what is his encouragement? We do not lose heart, Paul says, because we have this ministry through God's mercy. We are not discouraged, and our first point here, we are not to be discouraged because gospel work or ministry is God's work. It is God-given, given by God. The ministry that Paul talks about, or his service, the word ministry really means service or duty. It's a word we don't use very often nowadays, is it? His service or his duty, if you like, is that he is involved in God's work. It's been given to him by God, by God's mercy, he said. So this is not something that he's made up himself. He's not come up with some clever ideas and some new philosophy or better way to live and better approach, which he thinks if others follow, then they'll be as successful as he is or will get his approval. No. This, he says, is God's message. It's given by God and comes with all the authority of God himself. So what is this ministry then that he talks about? Well, therefore, in verse 1, you'll see there, tells us to look back to the previous chapter. Now, if you were here last Sunday, we looked at chapter 3, and you would have picked up much of this. But I want to just touch back and look at a couple of key verses briefly as we turn back to chapter 3 to help us to understand what is the ministry that Paul talks about when he talks about this ministry, and why is it that it is so important. Look back to the same page, if you're using the Church Bibles, chapter 2 and verse 12, where Paul says, chapter 2 verse 12, where he went to Troas. Why did he go to Troas? He said to preach, to proclaim, to tell the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. That's why he went there. So his ministry is preaching, it's teaching, it's telling, it's proclaiming. It's about words. Skip on a few verses to chapter 2 and verse 17, a few verses later on, where he says, in contrast to others who distort or peddle the word of God for profit, on the contrary, he says in verse 17, we speak Christ before God. It's a speaking ministry. It's about telling about Jesus. That's what his ministry, in essence, is about. His duty is to speak and to tell, to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. And in chapter 3, as we started to see last week, look at verses 5 and 6. So if I can just pull out a few verses here briefly again. Paul says, not only is that his ministry, but verses 5 and 6, his competence, his ability to serve comes from God. Verse 5, not that we are competent in ourselves to claim anything for ourselves, but our competence comes from God. He, God, has made us competent as ministers of a new covenant. The ministry is a speaking one. His work is to speak and tell. And his ability, his competence, you think for us, what makes me able, you able to tell your friends about Jesus? As Paul says, that comes from God. And throughout the rest of chapter 3, Paul explains why this ministry is so special. If you weren't here last Sunday, can I encourage you to maybe download that or ask Mike for a CD of that. That would be a real encouragement to you. As we looked in more detail at the contrast between the Old and the New Covenant there. But what Paul is saying in that second half of the chapter there, to summarize it, he's explaining why is this ministry so special. Yes, it's about speaking about Jesus, it's telling about Jesus. And yes, we can only do it because God has made us competent, able to do it. But the message itself is incredibly special. It is far more special than the message or the ministry of the Old Testament, which we looked at last week. Everything that the Old Testament speaks of or talks about was a shadow, was pointing forward to the work of Jesus. And as we saw, Paul describes that as being Jesus being far more glorious because he is the image of God. So the ministry, the service of duty that Paul has been given and that we are involved in is to tell people, quite simply to tell people about God's new covenant and promise that comes through Jesus Christ. That's what his ministry is when he talks about the ministry that he has. So we read at the start of the service from Ezekiel, didn't we? A long and difficult book in many ways. But the verses we read there reminded us of how God promised that he would forgive sins. There would come a time when he would replace hearts of stone with new hearts. Elsewhere in Jeremiah, where he talks of how he would write his word on people's hearts. There would be a time when God himself would live in people's hearts. And the staggering promise that God made through Ezekiel and Jeremiah and so on, That has been made possible and has come to effect. It's now reality. It's not just a promise to look forward to. It is now reality for Christians, for you and me today, through Jesus Christ. So that in chapter 3 and verse 18, coming to the end of chapter 3, before we come into chapter 4 here, Paul says that you and I, as forgiven people, chapter 3, verse 18, with new hearts, our unveiled faces, we can reflect, so as we look on, as we contemplate the glory of Jesus, we are transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory through the work of God's Spirit in us. Isn't that just staggering? That is just a staggering thought, isn't it, and truth. That because of the work of God in Jesus Christ, and it is the work of his Spirit in our hearts, it's not about us changing on the outside. He changes us from the inside. That's why this ministry is so powerful. So what is his ministry? To tell, to preach the good news that Jesus was crucified, died and rose again, is now ascended in all his glory, so that we might be saved. Now, if you had a message, or you could choose a message that you want to go and tell the world, I wonder what you'd choose. If there was a whole bunch of companies, maybe you could go and line up behind their product, what would you pick where you thought, yeah, I'd really like to go and represent that one, that'd be a good sell. Yeah, that'd be a good sell. What would you pick? What would you go and choose to tell your neighbours, your school friends, your colleagues, etc.? Maybe you'd like to carry the message. There's a new super drug that's going to cure cancer or AIDS. I mean, that'd be great, wouldn't it? You think of the impact that would have, a new drug with a cure, saving lives and all that. Well, think of it in contrast. As beneficial and wonderful as that kind of drug would be, it pales into significance, doesn't it, with the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is God's message. God's ministry, his message that Paul has here, it brings life. Just look quickly back at chapter 3 and verse 6. The kids, you have this in your notes just to help you through with this. It brings life in chapter 3 and verse 6. Chapter 3 and verse 9. This ministry brings righteousness, not our own, but through Jesus. Chapter 3, verse 17. It brings freedom from sin and death, from the penalty that we deserve. Chapter 3, verse 18. It brings real change, not just outward experience, not a new suit or a new tie or something like that, or a New Year's resolution, which we all break. No, it brings real change in our hearts. So here, chapter 4, verse 1, Paul says, it has been given by God. This is the ministry which he has, the duty he has. Why would he grow weary when you look at it that way? Why grow weary with such a powerful message, with so much authority which comes behind it? He has a message of huge significance which has been given by God. Now, there are all sorts of reasons why Paul and the Christians there in Corinth might be tempted to feel discouraged, and there are many for us too, some of them very similar. Tempted to chuck in the towel, to give up, stop working, stop serving, just go and sit in a quiet corner and retire maybe. Paul certainly faced physical persecution, opposition. His life was in danger in many times. And as we've seen in previous weeks, there was false teaching in the church which they had to combat. Just turn forward briefly to chapter 11. We won't be doing too much of this, but I think this will be just helpful to understand the environment and context that Paul is writing into. So later in the letter, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, page 818, and verses 3 to 6. Let me just read those three verses, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. But I'm afraid, says Paul, that just as Eve was deceived by the serpent's cunning, your minds may somehow be led astray from your sincere and pure devotion to Christ. For if someone comes to you and preaches a Jesus other than the Jesus we preached, or if you receive a different spirit from the one you received, or a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it easily enough. But I do not think I am in the least inferior to those super apostles. I may not be a trained speaker, But I do have knowledge. We have made this perfectly clear. Church in Corinth, or Corinth as an environment, was a place where there were lots of well-trained speakers, as Spencer mentioned a few weeks back, people with appealing ideas of philosophy, new ways of life, clever ideas, peddling those. They could stand up, charge people to come in and listen, make a following, build a reputation, and make a name for themselves. They could make decent money. It was all about external appearances and how I want you to see me, never mind the message. You know, I reckon they would have made perfect bloggers and tweeters, wouldn't they? And Facebookers. All about the external, the spin, rather than the substance. Well, that's not far from our culture, is it, actually, when you think about it? And Paul's concern from chapter 11, that this is not just happening out there in the world outside, but actually it was starting to happen inside the church in Christian circles, and that the same celebrity or success-driven culture was being brought inside the church, creeping into it, and that people were being deceived, as we read in chapter 11. And the false teachers were focusing, you'll see it in chapter 5, we won't turn to it now, false teachers boasted about the external experiences in contrast to the reality of their hearts. It was all about the external rather than them boasting in a relationship with God which changed their hearts. So do you see Paul's point? With all that going on, with all the distractions, with all the pizzazz of exciting ways of maybe doing church and things like that, isn't it easy to grow weary of just sticking to the truth and just doing the right things and sticking to God's message? Don't grow weary, Paul says, because the gospel is God-given. All other messages come from men. And as exciting as appealing that they may be, they are only men's messages. The gospel is God's authority and God's message and has God's power. Well, the second reason Paul gives, which is our second point, secondly, is he says don't grow weary of ministry, I guess that is truthfully told, that is told in truth, that sticks to the truth. And we see this particularly in chapter 4 in verses 2 and 5. Let me just read those for you. So picking up verse 2, Paul says, rather, we have renounced secret and shameful ways, and we do not use deception, nor do we distort the word of God. On the contrary, by setting forth the truth plainly, we commend ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. In verse 5, he doesn't preach himself. We do not preach ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, and ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. You see, Paul is not into spin, and he's not prepared to dress up the message because it's God's work. It's God's message. At the start of the letter to Romans, you may recall, Paul writes there that he says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God for salvation for everyone who believes. What's his point? I'm not ashamed of this gospel, and I'm going to keep preaching the truth because it is God's power. It comes from God himself. It's God's truth. What else can I add to it? We don't use secret and shameful ways, he says in verse 2. We don't use deception, nor do we distort the word of God. Paul says here that the style of message or ministry that he uses and which he wants the Corinthians to use and us to use is to be truthful. We are not to use deception. We are not to do anything to get people into church. We're not to do anything to get them to come to our events. We're not to do anything to try and make them say they're Christians. That is not what the gospel is about. And there is sadly a view and approach which many Christians in church take, which says that it doesn't matter what you do, as long as people come in, as long as we've got the numbers, as long as people are on the pews or the seats, then that's fine, isn't it? As long as we get them to come along, then that justifies the means. Let's make it more entertaining. More people will come, won't they? Yeah, of course they will. But of all the descriptions you find in the Bible of God's message, entertaining is not one of them, is it? It's not one of them. Oh, it's not dull. Look at chapter 3. God's message is glorious, we saw. It's astounding. It's joyful. It's powerful. But it's not entertaining. It's not about entertaining us. God is not in the business of entertaining us, but as we saw in chapter 3:18, in the business of changing us, and we are to stick to his truth. We do not distort the truth, Paul says, but we set the truth out plainly. He won't spin it. Paul won't try and dress it up. He won't try and make it more appealing. Can I convince you? Nor will he add bits to it. Nor will he take bits away to make it more attractive or to make it less offensive. The temptation for us all, we need to face, I think, is for us to do that, isn't it? To maybe downplay or to walk around a bit of the Bible, which maybe to us personally is a bit challenging to that part of my life. Or maybe when I'm talking to a school friend or a colleague or a neighbor, talking about this bit of the Bible, they might be offended by that. Let's just downplay that bit. Let's just ignore that bit there. There are lots of examples, aren't there? Just think about the culture and the church circles we live in. Thank God, not here. The Bible's teaching on creation, on sin, on the miracle of the virgin birth, on Jesus' miracles, and his death and resurrection, on sin and hell and judgment. All of those which are so essential to the message of God, how many of those are under attack? All of them. And how many of those are under attack within the church? All of them. Do you see the point? How easy it is to be deceived and to bend the truth, to try and make it more appealing. So if we say that actually, yeah, these things don't matter, there's no such thing as sin, come in the church, it's all about love and having fun, we'll get more people in, but we've distorted the message and we've lost the truth. You see, if we don't see God's message as being all important, if we don't see God's message as being critically important, and if we don't see Jesus as being glorious, that he is God's glory, then we will spin. We'll take bits away, won't we? We'll change the message to suit who we are talking to meet our ends. Paul says, no, we simply state the truth. We simply state the truth. Because all that can be known about God, all that can be known about him, and needs to be known about him, is revealed to us in the Bible, which is the message that he's given us. So because of that, in verse 5, Paul says that his ministry, his life, is not about building his own reputation. He doesn't preach himself and his own name. He's not after a following. But he's pointing people to Jesus. He preaches Jesus Christ. And in all his preaching and persuading, he's not trying to persuade people that actually Paul's lifestyle is great. Do it this way. No. It's about pointing people to Jesus. Follow Jesus. Look at him. Look at his glory. Turn to him. And so different is that approach to the false teachers that were in Corinth. And actually, how different is that to what we see in so much of our society and so many churches? That Paul also says that he goes on, he sees himself actually not as a celebrity, but of being at the disposal, at the service of others, verse 5. We see ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. For Paul, it's not about his rights or his ambition or his popularity. What about for us? Are we concerned about our popularity at school or at work? Are we scared of blowing our reputation for being called a Christian? It's not about that. Paul sees himself as being there to serve others, to point them to Jesus. How good are we at doing that, I wonder? That's a challenge to me. How good are we at seeing ourselves as servants for those around us for Jesus' sake? Don't grow weary of truthful ministry. Don't grow weary of sticking to the truth and proclaiming the truth, even though at times that's unpopular. We're not about popularity. We're about pointing people to Jesus and to his truth. But, you know, sure, we've all experienced the sense of frustration or discouragement. It's all very well talking about the power of God's word and his message. It's all very well talking about sticking to the truth. But I'm sure we've all experienced that sense of frustration or discouragement when people just don't get it and they don't believe it. Maybe we have people in our family who are not Christians, or our neighbors, friends, colleagues, and we've tried to talk to them for years, Maybe we've given them books. Maybe they've read books. We've prayed for them. We've invited them to things. They've heard the message. But why don't they believe? Why don't they get it? Easy to become discouraged, isn't it? To give up praying for that person, to give up inviting them, to give up talking to them. Why don't they understand? Don't they get it? They're just not interested. Well, Paul experienced that too. Which brings us to our third point, that thirdly, don't grow weary because gospel ministry is made successful by God. Okay, gospel ministry is made successful by God. So we face unbelief of those around us, don't we? Just like in Paul's time. So here we are in Chippenham, 2009. Here we are, a group of, what, 100 or so people this morning. Most of us, I guess, Christians, I don't know. We're part of a group of maybe a few thousand Christians in Chippenham, in different churches. Oh, and that's in a population of, I don't know, maybe 50,000 people in the area. So we're quite a small minority. We can be discouraged by that, seeing that actually the numbers don't seem to be on our side, do they, if you want to play a numbers game. And we've delivered leaflets as a church. We've done umpteen leaflet drops and put invitations through letterboxes. We've invited neighbors and friends and colleagues to events. Maybe you've prayed for family for years, for work colleagues and school friends and neighbors. And when we don't see people responding, what do we make of that? Easy to become discouraged. What do you make of that? Do we just give up and stop praying, or do we continue? Well, verses 3 and 4 and 6 here in chapter 4 remind us that God's ministry, gospel work, it's a spiritual work. It's not about us convincing people. It's a spiritual work, and it's a spiritual battle. The message of the gospel is God's message. We've seen that. It's God-given, and it has the authority and power of God. And the style, the approach that we are to use is simply to pass on the message of truth. But the results are entirely in God's hands. It's not about me being able to persuade you or anybody to become a Christian at all. It's entirely in God's hands. See, Paul is not fazed by failure. Neither does he take credit for the success. You see, he sees that actually, verse 4, he sees, why is it that people don't believe? Because the God of this age, he says, verse 4, the devil has blinded the minds of unbelievers. That's a harsh truth and reality, isn't it? The God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers so that they cannot see the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. What does that mean? Well, the devil is real. And we tend to think of the devil as a non-existent, or, you know, some kind of comic red character with a tail. No, he does. And Paul says here that actually he is the enemy of God. And if you're not a believer, then the uncomfortable truth is that the devil has got his hands over your eyes and his fingers in your ears. And he is absolutely determined to stop you hearing and understanding. He will do anything that he can to turn people away from God and from Christ. He started it with Adam and Eve, didn't he? This is nothing new. He started Adam and Eve. He deceived them. And he's been doing it since then. But, thank God, in his power, it is only by God's power that we can be made to see. Verse 6. We are to preach the truth. We are to point people to Jesus. But it takes God's work, the same creative power, Paul says in verse 6, that when God said, when he created the universe and created the world, he said, let there be light, and there was light. He didn't flick the light switch that was there. He made light out of nothing to shine into darkness. God's word has power to create light. In the same way, Paul says, he has made his light shine in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge so that we can know the glory of God in Jesus Christ. There's no amount of convincing that you and I can do to make people Christians. Yes, we proclaim the truth. But it is going to take a miracle of God's light in people's hearts for them to see Jesus' glory. It's only by his power that we have been able to see him, isn't it? You think for those of us who are Christians this morning? What encouragement can we take from that? Look at yourself, your own life, as you sit here this morning. I know I take this for granted. I don't think about it enough. To think that actually I haven't always seen the glory of Jesus. I haven't always done that. But it was God shining his light in my heart that made that happen. The same for you. If you see the glory of God, you are evidence of God's promise back in Ezekiel that we read coming to pass. He has given you a new heart. He has shone his light into your heart. But then look around in church, in our church family, or other Christians. What an encouragement to see all of you, as I look at you and you look at me, we look at each other, people who God has done that for, where he's shone into our hearts, and he has turned us from people whose hearts were hearts of stone to people whose hearts are after him. There's the evidence today in 2009 that God is at work. And there's the evidence that actually he can continue. If you're someone who this morning you've not yet trusted in God, you just don't get it maybe. Can I ask you to think seriously about that? Ask God to shine his light in your heart so that you will not be deceived by the God of this age. Be really encouraged, is Paul's message. Be really encouraged. Whatever the difficulties and whatever trials we face and whatever other fancy, clever, spinning ways there are that others may choose to use, and whether they dress up the gospel or whether they cutbits out the Bible, Paul says, be encouraged and do not lose heart. We have a ministry which is from God. It's his message and it's his truth, and he will work in power to make it work. Friends, I hope we are encouraged and challenged to go on in our work, whatever that work might be, for him at home or in church, that our work would be based on the gospel and proclaiming the truth of Jesus, proclaiming Jesus Christ as Lord in our lives, our families, and wherever we are.